This podcast is brought to you by lineupmedia.fm. This is Baseball Outside the Box with Peter Caliendo. Innovative thoughts from baseball's best coaching minds from around the world. Brought to you by lineupmedia.fm. Now your host, former USA Baseball National Team Coach, Peter Caliendo.
Hey, what's up, everybody in the U.S. and around the world? Welcome to the show, which interviews baseball's greatest minds in the game who love the challenge, the status quo. And we say minds because it could be coaches, players, administrators, all kinds of people in the game that have a lot to give to the game. And today, man, do we have a show for you. 16 years in the major leagues. He just retired. Played 2 years in the World Series, a three-time All-Star. A Marvin Miller Award winner twice. Only two guys have done that before. I believe he has more than two, but only two guys have won it twice, and that's for community service. And I got to tell you, I'll tell you more about him later. His parents have done so much, have been a big result of why he's been so successful in life and in baseball. They instilled in him some great things. And just to give you an example, some of the things they said to him was give back, never forget to enjoy the ride, don't think, and have fun. How do you love those, huh? He certainly has a great following on Twitter. Check him out at cgrand3 is his Twitter. We haven't told you his name yet. Big surprise. I'm sure you guessed by now. He's also an international guy. Every year after the season, ended up going overseas, promoted a game around the world. He's played on the World Baseball Classic, the USA team, and he is the Grandy Man, Curtis Granderson. Curtis, what's up, buddy?
Hey, what's going on, Pete? Thank you for having an amazing introduction.
Thank you. Well, listen, I even skipped the things like, you know, which I really wanted to mention was, you know, you went to high school in Chicago at Thornton Fractional, the alma mater, UIC, University of Illinois Chicago, my alma mater. You really built, you know, helped build that program along with a great coach there. Your 16-year major career. I didn't even mention, you know, how about the perfect game you broke Kershaw's perfect game, 1,800 hits, 344 home runs, 937 RBIs, 156 stolen bases, 465 slugging percentage, and all the things you do off the field, your foundation, Grandkids Foundation in Chicago, just unbelievable stuff that we could just keep going on. But I want the folks to hear you because, you know, they've heard you, they know about you. But we're going to talk a little different here in this part. We're going to talk about a lot of things you've done in baseball when it comes to development. But we'll get into all that. So just want to say thanks again for your time. I know even though you're retired, I think you're going to be more busy now than you were before.
Oh, man. Well, thank you. No problem. Thanks for having us. I know we've been trying to get this together, so I'm glad it worked out. And actually, the retirement thing, I think, allows the lineup along the lines of what you're saying. You know, I made the announcement January 31st, which is Jackie Robinson's birthday. And since then, you know, I was hoping to have quote unquote retirement, and things have been busy. But this is stuff that I enjoy doing and look forward to just getting a chance to talk baseball and try to help people either get introduced to it, fall in love with it, learn it, improve at it, or just understand what it's all about.
Well, you know, if you listen to all your interviews, you know, you understand. I mean, everybody already knows it in the game. I mean, definitely one of the greatest guys in the game. I know you don't like to hear that possibly, but and you're not going to say anything about it. But you've done so much, you know, on the field with your teammates, off the field. But what I'd like to do is, you know, since everybody's always talked about, you know, what an incredible teammate you were, I want to get into what you think an incredible teammate is and how important it is to that, you know, whatever you call the chemistry of the game or the game in general. Why is being a teammate so important when it comes to the you know, to being part of a ball game or ball team?
Yeah. You know, being a teammate has so many different things that it brings to it, because regardless of how good you are individually, for example, you mentioned Clayton Kershaw. He can throw a perfect game, but he still needs his teammates to score some runs. He still needs his teammates to play defense behind him. You know, you still need all those different things to go into it. It's not like golf, you know, where you're the only person out there on the course. You got potentially nine guys that are on the field, maybe some pinch hitters, maybe a DH, a base runner, you know, a pinch runner, all these different things. And that's just from the physical aspect of it in terms of going out there, producing, performing. But there's so many other things that a teammate can do, a combination of pushing you and motivating you, holding you accountable, you know, giving you space when you need it, and also being a visual aid, you know, whether you choose to lead by example, someone's looking at you going, wow, I can't seem to figure this out, but I like the way you're doing it. I'm watching the way you're doing it. Maybe I can pick up some things just from watching you. So there's all those different things that come into it from being a good teammate and why it's so important, because we're, no matter what ends up happening in this great game of baseball, everyone has to do something. Even if you're not on the field, you can be that person motivating somebody and saying, hey, you know, be ready for your next at bat. Or you may come in late into the game. You may start the game and come out of the game. But there's so many different things that you have to be able to do in order to be a good teammate. And the reward for doing it and being it, it can be astronomical. Continuing to help your team win and win as many games as possible, and creating friendships and relationships and just having fun and enjoying the game, all stems from being a good teammate.
You know, and it can't be easy at times, because, you know, you're talking about, you know, spring training, the games in spring training, then you got the whole schedule, and sometimes, you know, a little bit in the offseason, you're always with the same people all the time, traveling, being together. You know, sometimes it's, you know, you got to get on each other's nerves once in a while. You know, how do you deal with that? I mean, that's a tough schedule.
Absolutely. You know, 8 months out of the season, that's 2 months of spring training, 6 months of the season, plus potentially another month for the postseason if you're fortunate enough to get a chance to do it. Outside of just getting annoyed with each other, I mean, just think about your day-to-day, whether you're in a classroom or work setting, you know, or at home with your siblings. You see each other every day, we're going to bound to have some issues. But there's other things that also come into play here with playing the game of baseball. If your team is winning versus losing, if someone's playing over you, if you're injured, if you're sick, you know, all those different things can add to the stress and the difficulties that arise over the course of the season. I always said that it would be great if we were able to do a reality show of a minor league baseball team, because I feel like everything happens there in a nutshell over the course of that 6 month season, from the bus rides to players getting called up to getting called down to players getting sick to players just getting mad because their radio is too loud, or, you know, all those different things. And there's always a fight, no matter what. There's always a fight on the bus ride, because as you can imagine, you start putting a lot of gentlemen next to each other with a lot of testosterone surrounded, especially in a confined space like a bus, for 10, 12, 14-hour drives after losing 4, 5, 6 games in a row. Someone's going to be a little upset, but it would be awesome just to capture all that on footage so everyone can see what goes into being a good teammate, seeing what bad teammates look like, seeing just what the chemistry looks like, and just the overall battle and grind required in order to play at this high level.
Yeah, let's take that just quickly, that minor league part, you know, because not only that, but, you know, everybody's trying to obviously get a job, keep their job, and also get a job at a higher level. Yes, you want to be a good teammate, but yet you're also competing at the same time. Boy, that's a fine balance. How did you handle that?
It definitely is. And there's a couple things that people have to realize. If you're always comparing yourself or looking over your shoulder or looking to someone, for example, if I play center field and I'm looking at all the other center fielders and how they're doing it, who's struggling and who's hot and who's not and who's ahead of me and who's behind me. Well, all that energy, time, and focus is being put on that versus honing my game and worrying about the things that I can control. I can't control if the other center fielder has a good game or a bad game. I can't control if the other center fielder gets called up or gets sent down. But I can control, am I going to show up on time? Am I going to be a good teammate? Am I going to do some extra work, get some help when I need to try to improve? So let me focus on those things I can control and also just enjoy the situation. I should be excited and happy when a teammate gets called up to the big leagues, because we're building relationships. Some guys I've been friends with in the minor leagues, I'm still friends with to this day. And I got drafted in 2002. So we're going on almost 20 years that I've been friends with some of these guys. And as guys got promoted and guys got traded and guys got called to the big leagues, it was exciting. I didn't look at it going, man, that guy took my spot, and I wish he struggled so I get an opportunity. You start adding all that stuff to it, it makes it very difficult for you to go ahead and enjoy it. And a lot of people forget, too, the minor leagues is one of those things that there's so many more levels than people can anticipate. The New York Yankees, for example, currently have 9 minor league teams, Two of them are in the Dominican Republic. Two of them are in Tampa, Florida. Those are rookie ball teams. Wow. Then you have a low A team, a high A team, a double A team, a triple A team, you know, just to name a few. And you just start thinking there's so many guys. If I try to keep up with what everyone's doing, it's going to be difficult for me to go out there and hit the baseball and catch the baseball and do the things that I can control.
Curtis, you certainly eventually, obviously, can do anything you want in baseball. Let's take, if you were a GM and you had to pick a team, let's talk about the characteristics of the type of players you would look for. What would be some of the top qualities?
Well, outside of just the physical attribute, and I feel like everyone always starts the question that way, going, who would you take, Mike Trout or Bryce Harper or Machado, right?
Yeah, that's the easy one, huh?
Right? You know, they're just so talented and they're so amazing. But in order to win and to have a team that's going to be able to do well, you need a lot of things. You need a leader. You need someone that can lead by example, that can be vocal when needed to, and also can listen. Because there's going to be 24 other guys on that team that you got to go ahead and take the pulse of that room. So you have to look at guys that you go, okay, that's the guy that I want to go ahead and have me kind of lead this ship. In football and basketball, and even with the Yankees, I think they're the only team to really do it. And the Mets did it with David Wright. They actually had a quote-unquote captain on the team. Hmm. So that guy that can be the captain, that would be the guy that I would look to start the team with. Then I go get me the Bryce Harper, the Manny Machado, the, you know, the Mike Trout to fill in. Because you do need a superstar somewhere in that mix. And then you need a couple other guys that can fill in and just play wherever needed be. But that leader, that guy that can just take everything and go. And if you look at the Washington Nationals this past year, they had quite a bit of guys that could fill that role. And part of it came from experience. Obviously, you're not always going to be able to get veteran guys. But for them this year, it definitely helped out. And for teams that I played on that have had a lot of success, it was always something that I felt was a key component. For example, in 2006 with the Detroit Tigers, we had guys like Kenny Rogers, who was 40 years old, Pudge Rodriguez, you know, Dimitri Young, Maglio Ordonez, all that had played at very high levels that were leading young guys like Justin Verlander, who had just won a Rookie of the Year, myself, who was making the team for the first time, Marcus Thames, who's now the hitting coach for the New York Yankees, Ryan Rayburn, who had a great career. You needed a good mix and the balance of that in order to propel yourself to get to the postseason, to get to the World Series. And every team that you look at historically always has a mixture of that good leader present, mixed in with a good all-star, mixed in with some young guys that are exciting, mixed in with some guys that can do a little bit of everything. And those teams tend to be the most successful.
Curtis, you've been with a lot of clubs. What were some of the characteristics possibly that you saw once in a while that if a team wasn't doing good, you know, there might have been certain players doing some things that just didn't drive the team in the right direction? What would be some of those areas?
You start to see separation. Mm-hmm. You know, it's definitely a cliquey type environment, and rightfully so. We have players from all over the world, and by nature, you're going to kind of hover around people that do different things or do things that are similar to you, speak the same language, eat the same foods. So you start to get that, but there should still always be some overlap. And whenever that overlap doesn't happen, that's when you start to see some divide, especially if it's finger pointing. Hey, the pitchers keep giving up runs. Hey, the hitters aren't scoring enough runs. I wish my defense can play behind me. Now you're starting to see that division of separation. Anytime you start to have those issues, we can always point the finger right back at you, right? So, for example, if I'm going ahead and yelling at the pitching staff, man, you guys are giving up too many runs, the pitchers can point right back at us and say, shoot, why don't you guys score some runs, you know? You know, if the defense is saying, hey, if the pitcher is saying, defense, why aren't you guys making plays behind me? Defense can point to the pitcher and say, well, stop making bad pitches and having those guys hit missiles at us. So there's always going to be some sort of reason why you don't win a ball game. But as soon as we start pointing fingers and starting to make that divide, it can go bad really fast.
Yeah, and then you compound sometimes. And I don't want to make it sound like a negative game, but unfortunately there's a lot of failure to it too. And at the big league level, the long season – in dealing with failure, what recommendation do you have? How did you deal with it? Because certainly you didn't have great days every game. How did you deal the failure of the game, whether it be offensively, defensively, in the clubhouse, the mental aspect of it?
I think the great thing about this game of baseball is I remember my head coach in high school, Coach Bill Anderson. he always said, I enjoyed playing baseball because there was a good chance, because of the way the schedule worked out, I was going to get an opportunity to go right back out there and play the next day, if not the day after that, or sooner than playing football. Football, we only played once a week. But baseball, you're even in high school, you're probably playing Tuesday, Thursday, a doubleheader on Saturday. Mm-hmm. In Little League, you're playing Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday. So there's a good chance you're playing multiple games in the week. And because of that, you have a chance to fix what you did the last game out, improve on, continue to build from, do something completely different than what you did the last time out there. So if I was 0 for 4 on Tuesday, but we're back at it on Thursday, I have a chance to go 4 for 4 today. If I'm 4 for 4 on Thursday, when I get out there on Saturday, I have a chance to continue to build on that and make it a great week and end up being, say, you know, 7 for 10 for the week. So the fact that you've been through it before, you've failed before, you've struck out before, you've made an error before, you've lost games before, those reminders let me know that, oh, I did those things, and look, I'm still here. I survived it. I came out of it. I came back from it. Mm. I was able to get a hit after it. I was able to win a game after it. I was able to make a great play after it. So if you played this game of baseball and you played it more than one day, I guarantee you've had all those different things happen to you at some point. And if you don't believe me, just ask your people around you. Say, have you ever struck out? Hands will go up in the air. Have you ever made an error? Have you ever lost a game? Have you ever done all these different things? But then follow it up. Have you got a hit? Have you made a great play? Have you won a ball game? Have you hit a home run? And the hands will also stay up. So it's just another reminder to let you know whether you have an error, a bad day, a bad game. Tomorrow is a new day, literally. And you have a chance to do things that have never been done before from the previous day. And we've all been there. We've all done it. And we're all still here to tell our story.
Absolutely. Have you ever had, to use some kind of, you struck out and, you know, you got the next at bat or you made an error and you got to think about the next pitch now. Is there anything you did, you know, to remind you of that? Or was it just already ingrained in you?
I had to learn it a little bit. Coach Mike D at UIC, who you had spoken about, he implemented something. It was a little piggy bank. And I talked about it when I did a little bit of the television broadcast this year with TBS during the NLCS playoffs. Basically, if I had an error, I had a strikeout, I made a bad play, I overthrew a cutoff man, I missed a sign. When I got back in the dugout, there was a little toilet piggy bank about the size of a mini basketball. Mm. Flushed it. It made that toilet flushing sound. And it's over with. I can't dwell on that error I made in the first inning because the first inning is over with. I can't dwell on the fact that we lost the first game of this series because that game is over with. So the only thing I can do is focus on right now. And that is, okay, the ball's about to be pitched. Am I in position to make a play if it gets hit to me? Am I in position to swing at it if I'm batting? Am I in position to make the pitch where I want to? That's what I can focus on. Once that pitch is over with, it is gone forever. Now I got to focus on the next one. A lot easier said than done. But as soon as we can remember and realize that once it's done, it's done, it helps us get to a point where I can forget about that strikeout. I can forget about that loss. I can forget about that error. Case in point, when I was in the minor leagues in 2005 in AAA with the Detroit Tigers organization, we were playing a game and or playing a series, I'm sorry. In the first two games, I had seven straight at bats with seven straight strikeouts. I had guys on my team putting Band-Aids on my back, putting glasses in my locker. You know, what's going on? He can't see. He can't do anything. Sure enough, the next day, the next game, the third game of that series, I was 3 for 4, one hit away from the cycle. And just like that, I went from, you know, almost hanging my head to doubting myself to can I do this to just one swing of the bat changed, and all of a sudden I have three hits. And now you look at that weekend, that's a 3 for 10 series. Anybody would take that, right?
Even absolutely.
Seven strikeouts and there's three hits. That's 300. That's a Hall of Fame career right there.
Fantastic. And, you know, your parents have instilled in you, obviously, a lot of great stuff. I've read about it. I've heard you talk about it. You know, I'm going to go to one that, you know, was the that I mentioned earlier, and that is have fun. You know, what'd you do to have fun, whether it be in spring training, whether it be in games? Because sometimes we tend to be, you know, take the game just a little bit too serious.
We got to enjoy it and look back at it. What made us fall in love with the game in the first place? Was it playing catch with your parents, with your friends, hitting the ball, signing up for teams, just getting a uniform, having your name on the back, picking your number? All that stuff is still there, even if you're playing professional baseball, college ball, high school ball, in the major leagues. focus on that. Remember that there might be a few more people watching you. The field might be a little bigger. The stage might be a bigger, but that's what we all dreamt about. That's what we wanted when we were kids in the backyard going bottom of the ninth, full count. We didn't envision that with only two people watching us. We envisioned that with a lot of people watching us. We envisioned that in the biggest stage possible, in the biggest game possible. Now that we're here, let's remember, go, wow, I thought about this when I was a young kid. I remember playing catch in the backyard. Now here we are on the big stage in a big game, whether that's a high school game, a little league game, a college game, a pro game, a big league game. It doesn't matter, but it's all things that we thought about. So now that we're here, let's smile, let's enjoy, let's have fun, because we put a lot of work to get to this point. Even if it's your first game, you had to sign up for it. You had to get your equipment. You had to get to practice. You had to get to your first game on time. That's a lot of work and a lot of steps to get you to where you are today. So why not enjoy it? If I could either pick to have fun or not have fun, let me go ahead and enjoy it as best I can, because a lot of other people are here having fun. I'd rather go ahead and join that party than be on the other side.
Absolutely. And folks, you're listening to Curtis Granderson, the Grandy Man. He's on Twitter at cgrand3. 368,000 followers. I'm only like 258,000 behind, but I'm going to catch up soon. Unbelievable. I'm working at it, Curtis. That's one of my goals.
I like it. We'll do a follow Friday. You know,
there you go.
Like I used to do, and try to promote it and get it up there. And once this podcast is going, we'll definitely shoot that out there also.
Well, I appreciate it. You've always been great to everybody that's been involved with you some one way or another, even if you didn't know them that well. And I really appreciate that. Listen, in the off season, I want to ask you, because whether it's off season, then a little bit even in season, explain to our folks, coaches, players, and parents around the world, you know, what did you do in the off season? And when the season was over, because this is going to relate to, as you know, kids nowadays, they play 365 games, you know, a year. What did you do in the off season? Did you take a break? Then what? Then would you, you know, you start working out? Give us a little background on that.
So to rewind back from when I was in Little League and high school, you know, I played multiple sports. I bowled. A lot of people are surprised that I was a bowler. I really enjoyed that. I did that until I was 13 years old. And the only reason I stopped bowling is because we didn't have a guys bowling team in high school. We actually had a girls bowling team, but not a guys bowling team. I also played basketball. I ran cross country. I ran track. I did a little bit of everything, even played flag football. My dad wouldn't let me play tackle. So I did a bunch of different things over the course of the year, and I think they all helped me to be the best athlete in all of them, at least as I was developing as a young kid, a young adult, and even into an adulthood. Because if you think about it, everything I was able to take something from and build it to the other sports. So, for example, football, there was a little bit of quickness, agility, and power. Basketball, there was agile and explosiveness, being able to jump and hand-eye coordination. Baseball, hand-eye coordination and reaction. Cross-country, endurance. So if you're starting to think of, okay, what's the best athlete or what's the best player you want to have, I think you'd want a combination of all that, right? You wouldn't want just the fastest guy or the strongest guy or the most flexible guy or the most agile guy. You want a guy that has a little bit of everything. Well, if I'm only focusing on one sport, it's going to be hard to develop some of those other things. So I highly encourage parents and kids and coaches, even though things have shifted now and you're starting to hear a lot, hey, you have to pick one sport. You have to pick one sport early. You can't play them all. If you decide to do that, well, at least in your free time or maybe at one of the days that you have practice, let's switch up practice, for example. So for example, we have 5 days of practice this week. We're going to practice Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. And we're going to do all baseball stuff. So we're going to hit, we're going to throw, we're going to field, we're going to run, we're going to do all that. Well, maybe on that fourth day, today, no baseballs, no baseball bats, no gloves. We're just going to bring the soccer ball out and kick the soccer ball around. We're going to throw the football around. We're going to play a little basketball. Because if we break it down, you may say, wow, well, we're not working on baseball stuff. But you are. You're still running in baseball. So now instead of having conditioning or running the bases, we're running on the soccer field. We're running on the basketball court. If we're doing football, we're throwing the football, which is pitching, which is long toss, which is throwing across the infield. You know, we're catching patterns. You know, we're running routes. You know, it's like catching balls in the outfield. We have to guard somebody on defense. That's that ball that takes a bad hop in the infield, and I don't know which way it's going to go, just like I don't know which way that guy with the ball in front of me is going to go, whether it's on the soccer field or the basketball court. So we still just get one little day away to build on everything else. It keeps our mind fresh. And then we're right back to the baseball side the next day. And you'll be surprised when I make that recommendation to people. A lot of people look at me funny. And I just think about it. Baseball is so one-sided, right? There's very few guys that throw with both hands. There's very few guys that are switch hitters. No one runs the third base. You run the first base first, right? So you're always running in a left circle, right? You're always turning left. So why don't we practice turning to the right? Why don't we practice backpedaling, sliding to the left, exploding, jumping, right? Eventually, I'm going to have to rob a home run. I need to practice jumping. We don't practice robbing home runs daily. It's definitely not a effect or efficient way to use our time. But if we practice basketball and we're exploding for the ball, or football and catching passes up high, now when the time presents itself, hey, we kind of practiced that. Now it's ready. How are you able to do that? And just start looking at some of the top players currently in the game of baseball. If you go down the list, most of those guys had opportunities to play collegiate sports in another sport, played high school sports in another sport, played multiple sports. And part of it, in my opinion, is the reason why they are where they are. Michael Conforto for the New York Mets had football scholarships. Recently retired CeCe Sabathia had football scholarships. Jacob DeGrom had basketball scholarships. Mookie Betts, also a bowler. You know, correct me if I'm wrong, you have a potential future Hall of Famer in CeCe Sabathia and a World Series champ. You have a two-time Cy Young Award winner in Jacob DeGrom. You got an MVP in Mookie Betts. You have one of the most dynamic young players in the game in Michael Conforto. If I'm trying to model my game after somebody, those would be some good guys to look at and go, okay, how did you guys do what you were doing? Oh, I played multiple sports. I did this. I did that. Well, maybe I should at least consider that because it works for them. So let me go ahead and see if it might work for me.
I'll tell you what, great advice. Love it. And I remember one show we had, an expert told me that there was one top PGA golfer, only one, that did not play multiple sports. The rest were all multiple sport athletes at a young age. Love it. Love it. Love it. Also, you know,
sorry to cut you off right
there. No, go ahead. Go ahead.
Big. I think there's one other thing that I want to start focusing on too, which, you know, if you know any people that you're talking to that are in the medical field or anything like that, I'd love to do a study about this because I feel like the 25-year-old version of Curtis Granderson back in 2006, that 25-year-old is a lot different today in 2020 than the 25-year-old was in 2006 because we played multiple sports. So the fact that we were playing all those different sports, I had a lot less mileage, baseball mileage on me by the time I got to 25, whereas now the 25-year-old has started playing 50, 60, 70, 100 games at such a younger age. When they get to 25, their baseball body is so much older than my baseball body was at 25. They did a report in basketball recently about it, about the AAU circuit. And they're saying, hey, these kids are playing so many games, the jumping, the pounding, the running up and down the court, the not switching it up, the not getting rest, that when they become a potential 19-year-old draft kid, which is obviously where you want to be, the amount of miles and games they put on their body is so much more than it used to be. So I would assume the same is held true in baseball because I get asked by parents, hey, how many games should my kid play this summer? He's 12 years old, and we're deciding, should it be 70 or should it be 100? Just as a reminder, when I got drafted in 2002 at the age of 21, my summer professional league, the year I got paid, I only played 74 games. And now I have parents coming to me saying, my 12-year-old is being asked to play 75, 100 games. What do you think? And my question is, why? Why would you do that? You're 12 years old. You're not getting paid to do any of this stuff. I got paid to do that, and I didn't even play that many games. And I was 9 years older than your kid. So let's start to relate that and look at that and see what could happen. So if you have any medical people out there, I'd love to see what's starting to happen. Are you starting to see more injuries now in younger players, especially at the higher levels, because they've put so many miles on, because they've pitched so many innings, because they've had so many more at-bats, because they've played so many games? It would be very interesting to see my theory, I guess, in it. would be that there would be some studies to kind of support what I'm saying, but I don't have the time or the resources to do it. But the basketball stuff is lined up to it. And the 25-year-olds that I've had a chance to play with, I can sense it. I can see it. Man, I've had four surgeries. Man, you know, my back's already bothering me. My hips hurt. You know, it struggled for me to sleep. I was like, wow, you know, at 25, I was like, okay, let's keep going. Let's play another game. Let's do it again. When do we play again? You know? So
absolutely.
Just my comparison. I'd love to see that. And again, to all your listeners out there, there's nothing wrong with playing multiple sports, especially at a young age. I mean, Pete, you might remember this. I had a buddy of mine by the name of Mike Holba, who was a high school teammate of mine. Mm-hmm. Mike Holba was All-State in baseball, football, and basketball. But the interesting fact about Mike Holba is he was 6'9". So imagine if his parents would have told him to stop playing basketball when he was 12 years old. Now you'd have this 6'9" individual that everyone's looking around asking, do you play basketball? And that question, and the response would be, nope, I stopped playing when I was 12 years old. I say all that to say, we don't know what's going to happen between the ages of 12 and 15, 15 to 18, 18 to 21. You could get taller, you can get faster, you can get stronger naturally without even lifting any weight. So why would we go ahead and eliminate and reduce the possibility of you realizing the possibility because we cut your legs out from underneath you at the age of 12?
Absolutely. Now, I got to tell you, we've had experts on the show, and, you know, they've definitely – you know, you hit it on a button. They've definitely mentioned that. And also that the damage that's done to the muscles, to the tendons, because you're only using certain muscles and the other muscles are getting weaker. So there's so much to that. Agree 100%. We've had the ASMI guys on here talk about that. And Curtis, you do a lot of promotions. You do a lot of work with kids and parents. You do a lot with the community. That's what it takes. It takes getting to those individuals, because the studies are there, the research is there. It's a matter of getting to them and explaining all this, so that educating them, so that way kids are heading in the right direction.
And also understanding that I can't pay my way to success. I feel like that's one of the big things that's causing a lot of people to do so much more. If I pay a lot of money for it, then it must obviously give me a great return. If I get more games, I get more practice, I do all these things. But again, everybody look back to when you were a kid, especially to our adult listeners here. When you were a kid, there was always that kid on your block that was faster, stronger, bigger, whatever the case it was. And you used him or her as your benchmark. Okay, if I keep running against her, I'll be faster. If I keep doing this, I'll be better than her. And what happened? This summer, next summer, and the summer after, you finally got there. Did you pay for lessons? No. Did you do any more camps? No. You grew. You had a puberty hit. You got older. You got stronger. You ate. You did all these different things. Your body naturally started to put itself in a situation where it could start to do more. So let's not hinder all those possibilities of things that might potentially happen. And let's not be blinded by the fact that just because it costs more doesn't mean that the results are going to be better. Let your kid be a kid. Have sleepovers. You know, go to the pool party, have a birthday party, go to the movies, because you only get to be a teenager once. And once we take that away, it is over. You cannot get that back. And when I was in high school, the softball circuit, and Pete, you would remember this, the softball circuit is kind of what baseball is right now.
Yes.
If you played softball or if you played volleyball, you know, you were traveling all the time if you wanted an opportunity to play at the next level. There was tournament this weekend, tournament that weekend, all this, that, and the other. And I had a bunch of friends in high school, and you can just see it in their face. They were hating the sport because they were missing so-and-so's graduation party, or they were missing so-and-so's birthday party, or they were missing this bonfire, or this movie just let out. All the things that you would do as a 13, 14, 15, 16, 17-year-old, right? Mm-hmm. Now all that stuff being taken away from me to go to this tournament, play 40 games in the hottest summer, get some crazy tan lines, come home, hear about all the exciting stuff that I missed out upon, and then know that next weekend I got to go do it all over again. So I saw that. I experienced that. I said I never want that for me. So the timing of my career worked out really well where it wasn't huge at that time. But now seeing that now, I hope it's not happening to the kids. I hope the parents realize that and just remember how fun it was to be a kid when you were 12 years old, 14 years old, running through the sprinklers, riding your bikes. I know things have changed now. You have to have play dates, but it's still so much fun that you can't get back. So let's not forget that.
Absolutely. And listen, the other area, you mentioned that you played, you know, you played 16 years, but you also played in different times, which means as a hitter, I'm curious to know, you know, with all the technology and everything that's, you know, been advanced, were there things you had to change in your training as a hitter, you know, maybe from your fifth year to your, you know, 13th year?
I had to decide, okay, what has worked so far? And with all this new stuff coming, what can I use to continue to propel me forward? So early on in my career, I wasn't huge into video. I didn't need a lot of information. Less was more for me. I needed to know, does the guy throw strikes? How hard is he throwing? What does he like to finish the at-bat with? Does he like to throw a curveball or the split or whatever the case it is? That gave me enough to get myself ready. And how does he pitch left-handed batters? Because he's probably going to pitch me very similar to the other left-handed batters. So I said, okay, this guy doesn't throw strikes. I can be a little more passive. This guy's throwing strikes. I got to be a little more aggressive. Now it's two strikes. He's just throwing this guy a curveball with two strikes. He's throwing that guy a curveball with two strikes. Now I have two strikes. There's probably a good chance he's going to throw me a curveball. So that's how everything started. Now you started bringing in more and more video and this. What I pulled from that, same thing, I wanted to see visually, is he throwing strikes? Yes, he's throwing strikes, okay. What's his curveball look like? Now I can see it over and over again because I have the ability to watch the footage. And then I can watch how he pitched those other left-handed guys versus reading about it. So I was able to see all that stuff in addition to asking the question about it. And that's how I was able to start building things. Now you have, again, so much information, but to the listeners out there, you have to decide what works for you. Just because I told you this is what worked for me, it may not work for you. So decide what has been working for you up to this point. Look at the information that is available to you now or in the future that may come your way and go, okay, this is helpful, this is not, this is helpful, this is not. And use that to help build your career.
Curtis, was there any vision training you did? Anything, you know, maybe something that helped you pick up the ball better? Was there anything in that aspect of the game that was, you know, important to you?
Not early on in my career. I think the biggest thing for me was just always playing different styles of creative baseball games, which is kind of a lost art, but you can still do that even with your lessons and your camps and your organized practices. For example, maybe today you and me, Peter, are going to go out there and we've been playing baseball and practicing every day the same exact way. I'm batting left-handed, and Peter, you're a right-handed hitter?
Yes. Not a good one, but yes.
All right. And you're batting right-handed. Well, today you're batting left-handed. I'm batting right-handed. Not for the fact that we want to go ahead and be switch hitters, but we just want to change things up. So now I'm looking at it from this side where I haven't done that before. Without realizing it, we practice, right? Maybe today we're going to use a different size baseball. Instead of using the regular size baseball, we use a racquetball, which is a little smaller. Maybe a ping pong ball that's a little smaller. We use a broomstick. So I didn't necessarily pay for anything, but we were just trying out different stuff, maybe because we didn't have a ball. And you come to the field, well, I don't have a baseball. This is the only ball I have. Let's use this. Well, if you wanted to play and I wanted to play, we found a way to play. You know, we made a bat. We did something. You know, we had a bouncy ball that bounced all over the place. We moved guys from left field, said you can't hit the ball to left field. We moved guys from right field. You can't hit the ball to right field. You know, hey, we don't have a pitcher. Well, I guess I got a pitch today. So all those different things that we mixed and matched was a form of vision training, I think, without having to pay for it. So
sure.
If you're at practice or you're at a camp or you're at this, if you're a coach listening to this, today we're going to go ahead for this 2 hours of practice. I'm going to sit back as a coach. Here are the balls. Here are the bats. Players, figure out the next 2 hours. I'm going to sit back, make sure no one gets hurt. I'm going to make sure no one fights. But you guys have 2 hours to figure it out. And somehow they need to figure out some way to play. But, coach, we only got five players. And you guys want to play baseball or you guys want to sit here all day? You got to find a way to figure it out. But, coach, they keep hitting the ball over there and the ball keeps running over there. Well, all right, maybe we can't hit the ball over there unless we're going to keep going after it. Now we're practicing hitting the ball the other way or hitting the ball to this side of the field, you know, or pitching this way. The kid that never gets a chance to pitch gets a chance to pitch. You know, all those different things. You'll also start to see what you asked at the beginning of this conversation. You know, the good teamwork starting to build, the leadership. Somebody's going to take control and say, all right, you know, Johnny, you go over there, and Billy, you go over there, and we're going to do this. And so-and-so is going to listen and follow, and eventually 2 hours are going to get done. And just like we talked about, if you practice 5 days a week, you don't have to do that every day, but maybe once a week, maybe once a month. just to mix things up a little bit, because you'll never really get a chance to practice it. And it's all, notice I didn't mention anything that costs money.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to sign up for anything. You don't have to try anything. Just go ahead and bring some. I'm sure someone has something that is smaller than a baseball at home. And if you don't, get a piece of paper and ball it up. You know, there's all these different things that you can practice hitting that look a little different. Throw it hard, throw it soft, turn the lights down, turn the lights up, you know, turn around and have to pick up the ball. Just little things that you can try out and see if they happen to work out.
Curtis Granderson, we're listening to fantastic stuff. Curtis, 344 home runs. I got to ask you this. It was on my mind. You know, where'd you get your power from? Where'd you feel? Why did you have so many home runs? What was the feeling there?
Maple bat was the key for me now. you know, I think there was I found a way throughout the course of my career, even at a young age, to use the little body that I had. When I got finished up high school, I was 165 pounds. So I wasn't a big kid. I was 6'1". You know, I wasn't the slugger, but I just had raw ability. And I knew if I hit the ball on the fat part of the bat, it went further. You didn't feel it in your hands. It didn't hurt in the Chicago springs that we have where it could be nice, yeah, chilly and cold. You know, so I was like, okay, if I hit it off the end of the bat, that hurts. If I hit it off the inside of the bat, that hurts. So I got to hit it on this fat part. So the cold definitely helped me out in figuring that out. And as I got older, even though I was a small individual, I had explosive legs from basketball, from cross country, from football. And I was able to use those legs to work with my upper body that when I did make contact, it went a little further, right?
There you go.
And it didn't necessarily go 500 feet, but it went enough. If the fence said 330, it went 335. And last I checked, you still get the same amount of points for it going
that's
that
right
far if you hit 500, right?
Yep.
That was one thing I figured out and realized that I didn't have to hit it 500 feet, but I just had to keep myself ready to hit. And if I got myself in a good position to hit and hit it on that fat part of the bat, using my legs that I had been building up over the course of my career, I had a chance to hit the ball out of all sides of the field and without having to hit it out of the stadium. And all that stuff played into it. It helped out. And throughout the course of my career, everything just slowly built up. It was a work in progress. My first year in pro ball, I hit 3 home runs. In rookie ball, then I hit 10 home runs. Then I hit 20 home runs. Then I got to the big leagues. I hit 20. Then I hit a 30. Then I hit the 40. So everything was just a work in progress. I didn't get it all in one day. I didn't get it all overnight. But again, just understanding, okay, how my body works, staying connected, keeping everything nice and tight, slowly started to build. And next thing you know, I was able to use what they called at that time gap-to-gap power.
Mm-hmm.
Now it's called launch angle. You know, is basically what ended up happening. If you hit the ball in the gap, you're probably hitting the ball in the air. That's why it's a double or a triple. And now that it's being hit in the air and we can quantify it, now it's called launch angle.
And it wasn't something you were trying to do. Were you training for it? I mean, in the off season?
No, I hit inside in the cage. I mean, today right now it's 40 degrees here in Chicago. So, I mean, if you wanted to go outside, you could. I wasn't going to go outside and hit right now. So, I was hitting inside in the cage. And that was also something that helped me out. You can't hit the ball out of the cage. So I never really got into a situation where I was trying to hit the ball over the fence. And that's sometimes one of the negatives. I know everyone loves batting practice and they want to hit on the field. But you can get a little spoiled when you're trying to hit a home run. Or if someone in your group is hitting home runs, you go, man, I just missed mine. Let me try this. And you start getting away from what you're really trying to work on. And next thing you know, you're just trying to do too much and your swing gets all out of whack. And yeah, you hit some home runs in batting practice, but the game is when it counts. And if you watch my batting practice, I never hit home runs in batting practice. I even turned down the home run derby at the major league level twice because I knew I couldn't do it. But in the game, because of all the things I had been working on in batting practice, from staying tight, staying connected, trying to work the gaps, now as the pitcher was throwing 50 miles an hour faster than the BP pitcher, now those balls turned into home runs.
You know, I love what you said, staying tight and connected. Boy, that makes so much sense. You remind me a little bit of Tiger Woods from that perspective, the way he swung the club. Listen, you've been generous. You've been great. I just want to ask you a couple more things, and then we'll let you run.
Got it.
And important because from a defense standpoint, you know, we got a lot of players maybe don't spend a lot of time on their defense. Really curious to understand, what did you work on your defense? What did you do daily to help your defense?
Well, I use the information that was coming to me. So as a high school player, I was told I was too slow to play center field, and I didn't hit for enough power to play for the corners, and I didn't throw well enough to play on the corners. So I said, okay, all right, these are the things they're telling me I can't do. So I need to work on those things, right? It's real easy to say, oh, man, you know, he hits for power or he does this, and let me focus on the good stuff. But it's hard to focus on the bad stuff, but that's how you improve. If you listen to the negative things that are coming in and say, okay, I'm going to turn that negative into a positive, that's how things start to get better. And that's what ultimately helped me out. So I said, okay, if my goal and dream is to make it to the major leagues, and they're saying I can't play center and I can't play the corners, well, then my options are going to be very limited. So I got to find a way to figure this thing out. So one of the things I, again, use, and I hate to go back to it, the football drill. You know, imagine being a defensive back. I have a wide receiver in front of me. I have to backpedal on a ball. I don't know if he's going to turn left or turn right. Once he does, I have to drop step. I have to go. Now that ball's up in the air. I got to put my head down, get to the defender, close the gap, and try to knock that ball down. That's basically playing center field. You're starting at a standstill. You don't know where the ball's going to be hit. It might get hit over your head. It might get hit to the left or the right. Your first step might be back. Your first step might be in. But eventually, I got to turn. I got to go. I got to put my head down and go after it and eventually catch it. So the way we practice that drill, and you can use it in a small space or even outside in a big space, get a couple baseballs, have one person pretend to be the quarterback, have one player be the defensive back or the receiver or your center fielder, and have that person face the quarterback. Now we're going to work to our left shoulder, to our right shoulder, and straight back. Practice the drop step. That quarterback is going to toss it 5, 10, 15 feet, maybe further if you want to, and you practice running after it and going. We also can have it where, hey, you practice going to the right. Oh, the wind blew, like it could happen here in Chicago or in any other baseball field around the world. Now you turn to the other side, and now we go. Maybe you misdirected. Maybe you didn't see it right. Okay, you start back, and I throw it short. Now you got to come in. And then we have a little competition. So if it's you and me, Pete, you're the quarterback the first round. I'm the receiver the second round. We see who can catch the 10 balls. And we obviously make it tricky. So you're throwing the ball left and throwing the ball right. And if I dive, maybe I get 2 points. Okay, cool. You dove that time and got 2 points. All right, I'm going to throw this one over your head, and maybe you don't get it. And all of a sudden, wow, you had a great break for it, and now you catch it and reel it in. So we're able to practice it over and over again and get the repetition, all built off of some of the other sports that we've been thinking about, some of the other things that we got to incorporate into our game to allow me to become a better defender out there. And then from a throwing standpoint, we have to practice throwing further than whatever the target is we want to throw to. So I'm a pitcher, and the pitching mound is 60 feet, or what is it, 60 feet, 6 inches.
Six inches, yep.
If all I practice is throwing 60 feet, 6 inches over and over and over again, well, then it's going to be hard for me to throw through the catcher. And you've probably heard that before, to throw it past the catcher, you know, all that. So I need to practice throwing 100 feet, 150 feet, 200 feet, 300 feet if you get it. That's why you see pitchers long toss and do all this stuff. So if I can get my distance at least to 200 feet, well, 60 feet looks easy, right? If I can get to 300 feet, well, then 100 feet, which is the distance from third to first, looks easy. If I can get to 250 feet, well, throwing the ball from the outfield to the cutoff man is easy. But I have to practice throwing the ball further than the goal that I'm trying to, and now everything becomes a lot easier.
Man, Curtis, I'll tell you what, I could talk to you for hours. Maybe one day we'll get a chance to sit down and do that. Last thing, and let you kind of go with it, you know, a couple things. One, maybe a message to the parents that you might have, you know, kids playing the game, and also about your foundation. Love for the folks to know about it. You do some great stuff. Obviously, you've done a lot of things at UIC. You built a field, helped build a field there and all that. So if you could talk about that, and then we'll close it off, my friend.
You got it. And again, thanks again, Pete, and thanks to all the listeners listening out there. You know, I established the Grand Kids Foundation in 2007 in Detroit, where the high school graduation at the time was at 50%. And as you mentioned, both my parents, you know, very inspirational and important in my life, were educators. My sister also teaches at the university level, and I'm one of a handful of, at the time, current players that had a college degree. I think that number's starting to move up, which is great to hear. But education was very important in getting kids playing this great game of baseball and softball. Kids of all color from not only Detroit, from all over the world, was the focus. Now, fast forward, here we are in 2020. I also have my Chicago initiative, which is the Chicago Baseball and Educational Academy, which is in partnership with grandkids at UIC, my alma mater. We bring kids from all over the city onto a college campus, a safe environment, some of them for the first time ever, getting a chance to play this game and interact with kids that they may not have seen otherwise. Right now, we have the largest all-girls baseball camp going on currently every Tuesday and Thursday. I'm sorry, every Sunday for the next 5 weeks at UIC. It's the largest all-girls baseball camp in the Midwest. These are girls playing baseball. And everyone I've been telling going, baseball, like, why aren't they playing softball? And why would they have to play baseball if they're going to eventually have to play softball? And it's those comments the reason why we're introducing this program, because for some reason, somewhere along the lines, and I don't know who it is, said girls have to play softball at some point in time. And I just retired from baseball after 16 years, and I didn't see anywhere in the rule books that says girls can't play baseball. So if you're a girl and you want to play, if you want to play around the world, you play for it as long as you can. You don't play until someone tells you you can't do it. You play until you decide you want to be done with it. So that's my advice for the foundation, or that's my just initiative for my foundations. And my last piece of advice for all the parents and coaches and even the kids out there, you know, I wrote "Don't Think, Have Fun" underneath my hat for a reason. It's very important because you have to have fun. You have to enjoy. These are some great opportunities. You get a chance to play with different people all over the world, getting a chance to interact and realize that, hey, we're not much different than everybody else. And also, as long as we don't put added pressure on us, because the game is already hard, you're going to strike out, you're going to make errors, you're not going to hit the ball, you're going to lose games. So why add any more pressure of trying to get a scholarship or trying to get drafted or trying to hit a home run? Just enjoy it and have fun. And to the parents out there, let your kids be kids. You know, kids are supposed to do kids things. Remember how fun and exciting it was for you to be a kid. Don't take that away from them. And you'd hate, absolutely hate, for your son or daughter to say, you know what, I'm quitting because you made it too tough on me. I feel like that would just be a dagger in the heart. I'd rather them say, you know what, Mom, Dad, this was great. This was so much fun. I was so excited that you got a chance to be there and watch the games with me. Now it's time for me to move on to the next chapter of my life, whatever that happens to be. I would rather take that instead of someone saying, you know what, I stopped because of you. And I've seen that happen. At UIC, our state-of-the-art facility has amazing dugouts, and we had kids in there practicing and playing. And one kid was so excited about the dugout, and I asked him, I go, you're not excited about the turf or the view of the city or the lights? He said, no, I'm excited about the dugout. And I said, why? He goes, because my dad can't yell at me through this dugout. And that is something that stuck with me to this day. And he is not the first kid that has said something to me along those lines. You know, I've had people say, hey, are our parents going to stay up there? I said, yeah. They go, yeah, okay, great. My parents just always do this, that, and the other. So these are stories I'm hearing from boys and girls all over the world. Don't let you be that parent. I actually want to get, you might have seen those little stuffed animals that say chill pill on them. Mm-hmm. Start handing them out to the parents and say, parents, just take a chill pill. We're having fun today. Tomorrow will be another fun, exciting day. Here's a chill pill and a free T-shirt and a free camp.
Absolutely. I'll tell you what, love it. And that's the reason I'm a huge believer, Curtis, that when it comes to education, we've got to educate, yes, our players, yes, our coaches, but it's a three-pronged system. We've got to educate our parents. So maybe we can get together and do some stuff to really get out there and also educate the parents so that filters down to the kids. Thanks for being on the show, man. You're fantastic.
No problem. Thank you, guys. And to all the listeners, thank you.
All right, that's Curtis Granderson, 16-year Major Leaguer, 3-time All-Star, at Twitter, at cGrand3. Well, and we'll have that on the show notes. Thank you to Curtis Granderson. Thanks to our producer, Brian Kroc, with the Lineup Media Group. Thanks to the most important people on the podcast, and that is our listeners. We love you. Thanks for doing, you know, for always listening to the show and for forwarding it to all the people you know in the game, because we'd love to spread the show out as much as we can that helps educate people, not only in the U.S., but around the world on this great game of baseball. Thank you, everybody. We appreciate listening to the show that interviews baseball's greatest coaching minds who love the challenge of status quo. I'm your host, Pete Caliendo, and I want to wish you a great baseball day as well as a great coaching day. Sayonara, we'll see you on the next show.
This has been Baseball Outside the Box with Peter Caliendo. Listen online at baseballoutsidethebox.com and subscribe on iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, and all major podcast outlets. Join the conversation on Facebook and Twitter. Get all of our podcasts now at lineupmedia.fm. This podcast was a presentation of lineupmedia.fm.